This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman, and it is time for our Week in Review.
This budget is not without pain.
House and Senate lawmakers are voting this afternoon on a $40 billion state budget compromise. Here's Senator Karen Spilka, who chairs the Ways and Means Committee.
It's clear that the state is facing a shortfall in revenue that will have an impact on real people's lives, and there are cuts throughout this budget.
The compromise plan comes amid stalled negotiations over changes to the voter-approved recreational marijuana law, and as Governor Charlie Baker called on lawmakers yesterday to get the bills on his desk as soon as possible.
Well, I'm not one to tell the legislature how to do their job. I just want some progress on executing on the job, which means I would hope that sometime soon we'll see a budget and a bill on marijuana.
In the middle of a lot not going on, there's been a lot going on Beacon Hill. We'll talk about all of this happening and much more with our panelists this week. Right now, Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And also we have Tiziana Deering, co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College and a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Welcome.
Thank you.
And very nice to meet both of you because it's the first for me. So we've all been watching and waiting. The state has been operating with a supplemental budget since July 1st and when was the beginning of the fiscal year. The budget, this one, avoids tax increases and mostly holds spending flat at state agencies. I'm just going to list really quickly a few of the things we know thus far. $4.7 billion in state aids to city and towns, $400 million in cuts, appropriates $2 million for costs associated with regulation, possession, and sales of marijuana. And the budget solves an $837 million budget gap, but we're not exactly sure right at this time how it does this. What's your reaction in the immediate to what you've heard?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think, you know, folks have been waiting with bated breath around what this budget would look like. And I think there's still some uncertainty with tax revenue. So we're not surprised that there are cuts. I think folks, the advocates, are going to start combing through it. And they're doing it right now to figure out what those cuts mean for consumers, for beneficiaries, for residents. And then there'll be some conversation about what happens going forward. But I'm not surprised. I think we have to have a serious conversation in this Commonwealth about revenue that, quite frankly, our values and the things we want to invest in aren't being supported by the way we raise money.
So this is like a Band-Aid right now because we didn't, you know, because the work didn't get done by July 1st. We were talking just before the show started about transparency, and this budget was crafted behind closed doors by a six-person conference committee. It is the way business can be run. It was filed early this morning after 9 o'clock, 9:30. Is there a question of transparency now, Tiziana Deering? I mean, are we trying to... Right now, we're trying to sort through still in this hour what's cut, what's not cut.
Yes, there's a huge issue here. Right now, we're trying to still sort through what's been cut. You're asking me what I think about it, and my informed answer is, I don't know, because we're still trying to figure out what's in it. And yet, both chambers of the state legislature are preparing to vote on it,
right,
and then, you know, either already have or are preparing to in the next hour or so. You know, this is a $40 billion budget. I used to run a $40 million organization. If I had delivered my annual budget to my board of directors 7 hours before they had to approve it, we would have all been guilty of gross, you know, sort of negligence to our fiduciary responsibility. So I don't know how to feel about this budget other than, in general, I'm pretty sure where we have a revenue problem, it's low-income families that wind up suffering.
Okay, I want to ask you about this before we go into understanding a little bit more about the Medicaid program and how that fits. So I was reading on the Statehouse News Service just in the last few hours. They wrote about Governor Baker is planning to raid trust funds to balance last year's budget. Do we care about that going forward? Looking at these piles of money, there are trust funds in various arenas in the state budget. These are not, it's not unusual necessarily that you tap into that. But does that matter right now?
I don't think it. I mean, for the average person on the street, they're not going to see that or feel that or understand that. So I think the governor has some tricks up his sleeve, as well as the ANF secretary and others within the secretariat, to figure out how to do this in a way that, quite frankly, people don't feel it and don't see it. And there are some things that you can do as governor to make that happen. I'm not sure exactly how the trust fund process works. But I'm hoping that he'll do it in a compassionate way that doesn't impact the Commonwealth and impact the people we care about.
So some of the things we really care about are health care, for instance. Some cuts that we know about so far, $150 million from the state's Medicaid program, below what the House and Senate had previously approved, and reduced another $250 million from, quote, other areas of the budget. And this is Senator Karen Spilka naming some of the cuts.
For education, there's some cuts. We preserved Chapter 70, but we could not preserve the special ed circuit breaker for full funding. There's a cut at youth at risk summer jobs and family resource centers and other areas.
Tiziana Deering, surprised?
No. Like I said before, every time we don't deal with a revenue issue, usually it's the people who have the least voice and the least political and economic power who suffer the burdens in a budget. So, no, I'm not surprised. What does strike me and what I think we need to listen to between the lines is the things that she was just pointing at are things that are, to use a sort of a trite phrase, investments in our future. Right. These are about youth having summer jobs that allow them to fully participate in the economy when they're adults. This is about education, which affects future earnings and multi-generational family stability. So these short-term cuts that we're making to deal with our lack of having appropriate revenues are the kinds of things that can have a generational level impact on our future economic prosperity as a community.
So what's the fix? Is it increasing taxes on the upper income earners in the state?
Well, I think everything's on the table. I think you have folks like the Mass Budget and Policy Center and Noah Berger and his team that have offered suggestions on what we can do around tax revenue. We are no longer Taxachusetts, so there's an opportunity to look at revenue options. And then, you know, there is the tax on the wealthier folks among us. All of that should be on the table. But I know that there is a general resistance, at least on one side in the legislature, to tax increases. I was absolutely disappointed that the tax was not there for the flavored cigars. And that the provision around the Prevention and Wellness Trust Fund, which is actually making a difference in saving lives and people living healthier lives by intervening and giving them the intervention services they need, that didn't make it into this budget.
And that would have been how much?
I don't know what it would have generated. I don't recall. Mm-hmm. But we knew that the Senate was very much in favor of getting this done. The House had not had this in their version, and we were all hopeful it would be there, and it's not.
Right. That was actually one of the things that struck me. So here's my public confession. I am a very serious cigar smoker.
Right? Are you?
Oh, for the love of God, tax the flavored cigars. Really? We're not taxing
Well, you know, I drink cigars. Wine and beer. I'm okay if that goes up, too. That's my confession, too. All right. But that said, I want to ask you one other question before we turn to other substances like marijuana. We've got, you know, you said this, and Noah Berger said this. It's like, no, you feel like the lawmakers are not looking ahead at the big picture, at the long-term investments that need to be made to improve the overall government infrastructure separate from roads and water passages and all that. So the big structural issues, when is any state government ever going to be able to catch its breath to do this? And I mean, is there something you can say to that in 30 seconds or less?
Yeah, I mean, it really is about political will to do it. I mean, ultimately, states all over the country are facing the same decision, that they have priorities. They have people that are hurting, that are in need. They have businesses that need investment. They have roads and bridges that need fixed. And you just got to decide how you're going to do it. I think it's one of the most daunting challenges for a legislator. And I don't take that lightly. But you got to find a way to do it.
Yeah, public will or not, you cannot continue to increase expenses and not increase revenues, period. Right. The math just doesn't work.
One of the revenue generators could become marijuana, legal marijuana sales in the state, if anybody could decide what those sales tax will be. So we know that this has also been in the mix on Beacon Hill this week. The conference committee was unable to reach a compromise last week. Self-imposed deadline was Friday. The Senate basically wants the voter-approved law to remain intact. The House is pushing for a couple of big changes. More than doubling what the voters approved, the tax rate would go from 12% to 28% if the House had its way, and giving municipal leaders, towns and cities, rather than the voters, a say on whether to ban the marijuana businesses from opening up in their towns. So we have some understanding that this is all tabled until next week. Do you think, first of all, did this get tangled up with the budget? And is that why we landed on this Friday, waiting to hear still at this point with 7 hours of review time? Well, is this all tangled up?
Well, who knows? I mean, if you listen to both leaders, they were not tangled up. And many of the budget crafters would say it's not tangled up either. It may have been, but we know from the leadership that it is not. So I think it really doesn't matter at this point. We needed both things to get done. I think in terms of the timeline to get this, the regulations around pot shops and taxes and so forth for the marijuana law, it's necessary that we move quickly with all deliberate speed. And I think to Senator Rosenberg's point, we can do both at the same time. Unfortunately, it is suspended until they reconvene after they pass
right,
the budget.
Right. Well, let's hear a little bit from Senator Rosenberg. House Speaker Robert DeLeo, we know, unilaterally called off negotiations on the bill to focus on the budget, and that led to a sharp rebuke from State Senate President Stan Rosenberg. Here is WBUR Steve Brown speaking to Rosenberg yesterday afternoon after a compromise was reached on the budget.
Seems that a budget is at hand.
A miracle of miracles. We suspended a unilateral suspension of the Conference Committee on Marijuana, and 24 hours later, miracle of miracles. I've been in this building for about 40 years. That's about the most absurd thing that I have ever seen.
Why absurd?
Well, my snarkometer is certainly going off.
Yeah, no, you can see it from like the fiddler on the roof. You know, you might as well have broken out into song at that point.
Yeah, there was some dripping irony going on there. You know, whether they were tangled or not, it is easy to have one thing cause distractions from another. Right. And deadlines are an interesting part of this entire discussion. Self-imposed deadlines versus real deadlines. For example, why do we need a vote on the budget today? We have an appropriations bill that gets us through the end of the month. Couldn't we vote on it next week when people had more time to look at it? So, you know, some of this entanglement or distraction is not some of it. It all seems to be entirely sort of self-driven. And that's really unfortunate. At the same time, one can understand if you're dealing with too many complex issues at once, sometimes you got to table one
right.
to get one done. And that's not
Absolutely.
Necessarily bad or irresponsible.
And Michael Curry, does this reveal any new tensions between Rosenberg and DeLeo? I mean, is it going to hamper political processes going forward in your sense?
No, I don't think it does. I think that there is an inherent tension that exists between the Senate president and the speaker, no matter who they are. I think those chambers have a healthy friction that I think for us as residents of the Commonwealth, we should be thankful for. There are some things you can go to the House and you can get advanced and there'll be resistance in the Senate and vice versa. So I don't see anything new with this, quite frankly, having been through this many other times. I've seen much more friction in this.
Right, so. Right. Well, one other point on marijuana. So this is another issue of transparency, at least to the voters in another way. This was a ballot initiative voted on, you know, by residents. So is there enough pressure to make lawmakers accountable to voters on this issue, which, again, they approved last November?
Yeah. So somebody I know says that ballot initiatives are two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. You know, you get in a ballot initiative, it's a very blunt object for creating legislation.
Right.
And I do think, at least to some extent, it's understandable for the legislature to say maybe we don't need every detail of a piece of legislation dictated on the ballot. Maybe there's room for some nuance and adjustment. So this kind of all one side or all the other, it has to be exactly like it came out, or it can't, you know, or we're going to do it entirely differently. Both seem unrealistic, but it does seem like it's appropriate to say, let's go through this legislation and make sure it's enacted smartly, competently, and in a way that's going to be effective.
Okay. Lawsuits, education lawsuits. Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey this week, yesterday, she is leading 18 other attorneys general in suing the Trump administration and Betsy DeVos over student loan protection. So new regulations would have made it easier for students to seek loan forgiveness if the school deceived them or committed fraud. And this was worked on under the Obama administration, was supposed to go into effect July 1st. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos delayed these rules, saying the Obama rules missed the mark and that her department would come up with new regs. Attorney General Maura Healey, this is near and dear to her. She's worked on this issue about for-profit colleges and student loans with some great concern. She argues the Trump administration is siding for for-profit colleges, that they're taking advantage of students and taxpayers.
What she did was illegal, and more importantly, it's unfair. It makes no sense. Unfortunately, though, we have a Secretary of Education and Betsy DeVos who's more interested in protecting the executives of for-profit schools than actually protecting the students whose responsibility is that her office takes care of.
So this is a priority for Healey's office. Is it something that is a priority as a lawsuit in this state?
I think it should be.
State of education?
Yeah. I mean, this is Massachusetts. We care about education. We care about higher education. And this is really, really important. And what I feel like the Attorney General is doing here is it's part of a strategy that she seems to be pursuing to take a stand against this process of essentially systematically dismantling the department you run because you don't believe in the role it plays in government.
Absolutely.
And we certainly seem to be seeing that with Secretary DeVos. And this is just one, seems to be one more example of that.
And it's concerning for all of us who are in this area thinking about education and how to make it work for all of us. And the reality is, you know, I've always often compared the Trump administration to the Bad News Bears. And she's one of the key players in the Bad News Bears. trying to overturn regulations, trying to suspend legal cases that are pending. We are all deeply concerned about this woman. I actually find that even when I talk to charter school advocates who will be benefited by her leadership, they're terrified of her as well.
Interesting. Attorney Dennis Cariello, he represented the for-profit colleges as the Obama rules were negotiated. He says the Obama rules go too far and the simple clerical errors could lead to punishment for the schools.
I mean, you can see one mistake can create an existential crisis at an institution.
So still, rules contested. And if the new administration has concerns, why not reexamine them? Why not give the Trump administration a chance?
Well, you know, there's a difference between giving the Trump administration a chance and leaving absolutely no recourse while they take their time having a chance. And I think that's a really big deal here. I mean, at the risk of sounding glib, and I will, pretty much the only people who are on the side of the for-profit colleges and universities in this are the for-profit colleges and universities,
well
right? So, you know, why can we not enact the regulations while they're being reconsidered? You know, Maura Healey argued herself that this isn't a pause, this is a stop.
Mm-hmm. And every statement from a state against an administration right now is carrying some bigger ball, is my hunch. Mm-hmm. Let's have a little light and hope here. Celtics, who cares about the Celtics? Oh, I see a finger pointing. Okay, so listen, we have Banner 18 could be in sight for the Celtics, right? Maybe Utah Jazz All-Star forward Gordon Hayward says he will sign with the Celts, reuniting with his college coach Brad Stevens. Gordon has agreed to a lovely contract, 4 years, $128 million. Hayward explains his decision on his website or on the website, the Players Tribune, like this. Unfinished business that he and his coach had together back in 2010 when he left Butler for the NBA. That's Butler College. As far as he's concerned, all of these years later, we still have it, and that's to win a championship. Michael Curry, what do we think? Are we excited?
So I will tell you, I was playing basketball this morning, and I think my poll is that people are pretty excited about him coming to the Celtics. The reality is there's a big divide between us and the Cleveland Cavaliers. This doesn't get us all the way across that divide, but it gets us a significant step in the right direction. We are nowhere near winning a championship.
You heard it here.
This is progress.
All right, you heard it here. You may have heard something else yesterday, but you heard this here. All right, now, we have enough time right now for our hubbubs, which are those smaller stories that don't get a lot of attention this week. Michael, you want to start?
Yeah, I think the interesting story for me as a person who is a student of history is just the old Amelia Earhart story, and it's been dominating the news in the last 2 days, that there's now a potential theory around what happened to her. I was reminded in this story that she has a strong Boston connection, that she had a residence here, that there was a terminal at Logan Airport named after her. I think that, you know, we owe it to history to figure out what happened to Amelia Earhart. So I think that's my hubbub. The many stories that have been covered about her life, the 80 years since she disappeared.
What I love about this is that maybe somebody really didn't hear this and they happen to love this history and love this. And then now they're going to go dig it up. They're going to go Google the heck out of it. So, all right, Tiziana, what's your hubbub?
Oh, I love my hubbub this week. It's about the little boat that could and a boat and some high school youth who defied expectations. So we had some students who were participating in an alternative high school education program, which usually means they've been labeled as not being able to be successful in traditional school models, right? These young people built a 5-foot sailboat and launched it back in December, unmanned sailboat, 168 days at sea. They were shooting for Ireland. It actually made it to Scotland with the little Lego pirate captain they put in it, still intact at the helm.
Awesome. Super glued.
I just love it. I just, everything about the expectations
that's
they
great.
Defined,
and,
I
know,
just
but
think it's
Bush,
fun.
Would any Bush funding in there? No, probably not. So I have one. My hubbub takes place in Maine also. It involves super speed and bears, and there is a professional runner whose name is, he's from Kenya. His name is Modina Murube, and he took off running. You know, he's out having a good time. He was running to a vacant house about 20 yards away when this bear was chasing him. He was out just, you know, cruising on Wednesday, and two bears crossed his path, and he beat the bears. He made it to the screened-in porch, and the bears were close behind, but he did it. So we should note that the Maine wildlife officials do not recommend trying to outrun the bear. It says you should appear large and make noises while slowly backing away, and I guess unless you're really fast, that might be an option. So
that's
probably
hilarious.
So. Thank you. Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and now with the National NAACP Board of Directors. Thank you so
much. Thanks for having
really
me.
Nice to meet you, too. And Tiziana Dearing, co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College and a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Great to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks very much.
This is 90.9 WBUR. This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman.